If I am right about the flattening of the world, it will be remembered as one of those fundamental changes, like the rise of the nation-state or the Industrial Revolution, each of which, in its day, noted Rothkopf, produced changes in the role of individuals, the role and form of governments, the way we innovated, the way we conducted business, the role of women, the way we fought wars, the way we educated ourselves, the way religion responded, the way art was expressed, the way science and research were conducted, not to mention the political labels we assigned to ourselves and to our opponents. If the prospect of this flattening, and all of the pressures, dislocations, and opportunities accompanying it, causes you unease about the future, you are neither alone nor wrong. Whenever civilization has gone through one of these disruptive, dislocating technological revolutions, like Gutenberg's introduction of the printing press, the whole world has changed in profound ways. But there is something about the flattening of the world that is going to be qualitatively different from other such profound changes. The speed and breadth with which it is taking hold. This flattening process is happening at warp speed and directly or indirectly touching a lot more people on the planet at once. The faster and broader this transition to a new era, the more likely is the potential for disruption, as opposed to an orderly transfer of power from the old winners to the new winners. And that is why the great challenge for our time will be to absorb these changes in ways that do not overwhelm people, but also do not leave them behind. None of this will be easy. But this is our task. It is inevitable and unavoidable. It is the ambition of this audio program to offer a framework for how to think about it and manage it to our maximum benefit. The 10 Forces That Flattened the World. This chapter is about the forces that flattened the world and the multiple new forms and tools for collaboration that this flattening has created. Flattener number 1. 11-9-89. When the walls came down and the windows went up. The first time I saw the Berlin Wall, it already had a hole in it. It was December 1990, and I was traveling to Berlin with the reporters covering Secretary of State James A. Baker III. The Berlin Wall had been breached a year earlier, on November 9, 1989. Secretary Baker was making his first visit to see this crumbled monument to Soviet communism. I was standing next to him with a small group of reporters. After Baker finished looking through the wall and moved along, we reporters took turns peering through the same jagged concrete hole. I remember thinking how unnatural it looked. Indeed, what a bizarre thing it was, this cement wall snaking across a modern city for the sole purpose of preventing the people on the other side from enjoying, even glimpsing, freedom. The fall of the Berlin Wall on 11-9-89 unleashed forces that ultimately liberated all the captive peoples of the Soviet Empire. But it actually did so much more. It tipped the balance of power across the world toward those advocating democratic, consensual, free market-oriented governance, and away from those advocating authoritarian rule with centrally planned economies. The Cold War had been a struggle between two economic systems, capitalism and communism, and with the fall of the wall, there was only one system left, and everyone had to orient himself or herself to it one way or another. Henceforth, more and more economies would be governed from the ground up by the interests, demands, and aspirations of the people, rather than from the top down by the interests of some narrow ruling clique. Tarun Das was heading the Confederation of Indian Industry when the wall fell in Berlin, and he saw its ripple effect felt all the way to India. "We had this huge mass of regulation and controls and bureaucracy," he recalled. Nehru had come to power after the end of British colonial rule and had a huge country to manage and no experience of running a country. The U.S. was busy with Europe and Japan and the Marshall Plan. So Nehru looked north, across the Himalayas, and sent his team of economists to Moscow. They came back and said that this country, the Soviet Union, was amazing. They allocate resources, they give licenses, there is a planning commission that decides everything, and the country moves. So we took that model and forgot that we had a private sector. That private sector got put under this wall of regulation. By 1991, the private sector was there, but under wraps, and there was a mistrust about business. They made profits. The entire infrastructure from 1947 to 1991 was government-owned. The burden of state ownership almost bankrupted the country. We were not able to pay our debts. As a people, we did not have self-confidence. Sure, we might have won a couple of wars with Pakistan, but that did not give the nation confidence.
In 1991, with India running out of hard currency, Manmohan Singh, the finance minister at the time, and now the prime minister, decided that India had to open its economy.
"Our Berlin Wall fell," said Das, "and it was like unleashing a caged tiger. Trade controls were abolished. We were always at 3% growth, the so-called Hindu rate of growth, slow, cautious, conservative. To make better returns, you had to go to America. Well, 3 years later, after the 1991 reforms, we were at 7% rate of growth. To hell with poverty. Now, to make it, you could stay in India and become one of Forbes's richest people in the world. All the years of socialism and controls had taken us downhill to the point where we had only $1 billion in foreign currency. Today, we have $118 billion. We went from quiet self-confidence to outrageous ambition in a decade. The fall of the Berlin Wall didn't just help flatten the alternatives to free market capitalism and unlock enormous pent-up energies for hundreds of millions of people in places like India, Brazil, China, and the former Soviet Empire. It also paved the way for the adoption of common standards, standards on how economies should be run, on how accounting should be done, on how banking should be conducted, on how PCs should be made, and on how economics papers should be written. To put it another way, the fall of the wall enhanced the free movement of best practices.